This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music. Music.
God, am I excited, because on the phone with me is the vocalist of that band that I absolutely love, and many of you do too. Very special episode with Craig Wedren, the, you know, big part of that band, Shudder to Think, and many other projects. So, Craig, thank you for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So the X-Friends T-shirt is a song that, you know, just a little quick memory of how I got to know your band, how I got to know you. And of course, Shudder to Think was, it had to do with Jawbox, actually. And in the novelty CD, Jay Robbins is wearing a Shudder to Think T-shirt. And my best friend and I went,
oh, yeah, that's right.
So my best friend and I went, oh, my God, if Jay Robbins is wearing that band's shirt, they've got to be awesome. So we bought.
And he was wearing that shirt. Wait, Novelty was that their first major label record? What year was it?
That was still with Discord. That was the second album.
Discord record, right.
That was the second album.
So Adam, who plays drums on X-Friends T-shirt and played drums on Pony Express record, was playing drums in Jawbox at the time. I think before Bill joined.
That's correct.
So I think it's the same drummer. I think it's the same drummer on Novelty as on X-Friends.
That's exactly right, because when you look at the Novelty, This is why everyone needs to go out and look, but inside the Novelty insert is, it says Adam Wade drums, and there's Jay's shirt. So it's funny how all those connections, and back then, that's what music, and I hope younger people are discovering music. I know it's a little different now with the internet. But it was like when you found one band, it led you down different rabbit holes. And that's what that did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And Shudder to Think.
Yeah, I mean, there was just only so much access and so many or a limited amount of input. So when an artist you loved and respected was wearing a T-shirt, literally that was enough to, you know, send you to the record store to, you know, buy a whole catalog.
It's Jay's fault. So
yeah, it's Jay's fault.
But yeah, and then of course,
I don't think he would have worn that shirt after we poached his drummer. That's why I was wondering. I was like, wait, Novelty? It must be, because I mean, he must have been angry at us. But I mean, obviously, Bill joined the band, who was completely awesome. So I mean, it all worked out. But I felt bad,
but
because we went on tour with Jawbox and fell in love with Adam, and Adam fell in love with us, and it was like and then our drummer, our first drummer Mike, quit music to be a grown up, and so Adam joined the band, and it must have been weird. Change partners.
Yeah, but it all works, because now that album
totally worked out for everybody.
It sure did. And that album, Pony Express Records, was, you know, went down to the store and bought Pony Express Records, and we wore that thing out over and over again. And of course, X-Friends T-shirt was later on in the album. It all started with a song called Hit Liquor, which I might work in here. But again, This is what, now one song I wanted to really play here, it was a song from Funeral at the Movies. I'm taking you back in time.
Yeah.
But it's this song's lyrics, and I just want to play it and then we'll discuss it. It's it, oh my God, the lyrics in this song are some of the best that give.
Thank you.
Absolutely. The goosebumps in the lyrics. Here, let me play this and the way you sing it. Here we go.
That's interesting. The lyrics to Chocolate. Chocolate was a nickname I had for my friend Jenny, who I was in class in college with. I went to this I was part of this experimental theater program at NYU throughout the Discord years, basically. And so I traveled back and forth from DC to New York on the weekends and on vacation, and we would rehearse and we would tour and we would record. And so a lot of the songs, particularly on Funeral at the Movies, are about friends of mine from school. That particular one, I mean, very loosely, which is to say they sort of, in a dreamlike way, they kind of ghost their way in and out and get collaged and combined with a whole lot of other people and ideas. So Chocolate was this sort of, so I was in this experimental theater sort of performance art program, and there were just wonderful, beautiful, beloved friends and characters in the same program with me. And this woman, Jenny, was in it, and she had this sort of character, this sort of voice she would go into, which we nicknamed Chocolate. That was her name. And I don't know, somehow it inspired, I guess, an entire song. It became that. But it makes me happy that you that those lyrics rock you. Why? Can you explain to me why?
It's this line just in the beginning when you say, "What I'm really second best to the one who's on your chest, and in your eyes I look resides beyond sex." But it's that I'm really second best to the one who's on your chest is one of the most poetic lines that could be in a song. And then. When you wrote, "Don't go, because you make me see that I just can't see." Now, in the first verse, it's that, and you're kidding me. And then later on, it's, and you're killing me, and I'm falling backwards. That's why. It's just the image I get, this beautiful, romantic image, but in a, it's hard to explain, but emotionally how those words hit with your vocals and the music.
Thank you.
Just make this a great song.
Thank you so much. I love Funeral at the Movies. I feel like that's sort of our poppiest record, or like the most sort of overtly melodic one. And those lyrics, I don't know, just hearing Chocolate, like just you playing it and hearing it sort of with a semi-objective perspective, because usually when I'm hearing it, it's because I'm playing it or trying to relearn it. And so I'm not really thinking about where it came from or what the context was. But I feel like, you know, I was in my early 20s, like maybe 20. And there's so much magnified emotion, or at least there was for me in that era. There was so much love and you know, passionate, poetic, like French romantic level love, crush, pining, lust, and it would all sort of smush together in the really epic. I don't know. I mean those magnitudinous feelings from that era are to me kind of not just poetic lyrically, but like melodic.
Absolutely.
And so it's interesting hearing that from your perspective, because I'm like, oh yeah, that's a heart wrencher.
Yes, it is.
Like we've all been there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
which I hadn't thought of that song in those terms in a very, very long time. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. And it's just one of those that, you know, when I play it, I was joking around with some other bands I've interviewed. No Knife. You might have played with them before years ago. I don't know.
No, you know, I had never heard or frankly even heard of No Knife until I'm actually playing with Jawbox in July one night in Los Angeles, and No Knife is playing the next night. And so I'm really excited to hear them.
Well, that interview, I interviewed Mitch Wilson, who's the vocals main like songwriter along with Ryan. And I'm trying to get Ryan to do so I could do a behind the music, but there we were talking about your music and other bands. Like for example, you're going to laugh, but there is a Christian heavy metal band called Demon Hunter. That's huge right now. And yeah. Ryan Clark's the singer. And he says you're one of his favorite vocalists and songwriters of all time.
Really?
Absolutely.
And I'm a lousy Christian.
Well, I mean,
I'm an excellent Demon Hunter.
They really don't write that into the their faith, really, into the lyrics per se. They leave it very open. That's just their personal thing. Yeah. But in his interview, because they're a heavy, heavy band. And it was just funny when he was talking and he says one of the go-to albums or bands was Shudder to Think. And Craig was one of his favorite vocalists. And many bands I've talked to.
That's so cool. That makes it feel great.
Yeah. You influenced a lot of people. So, yeah. So going from chocolate, I want to go to Goat. Get Your Goat. Another Discord record. Mm-hmm. And there was a song called She Wears He Harem. And it's this part right here that I absolutely love the way you sing it. And it's these words right here, which is interesting. See the stone moths that sweep up and the suitcase full of new clothes made of man skin and the souls that you done stole. It's man, is that good? Now, this is the music right here. Love how that song ended. You're about to say something, Craig. I'm sorry. I heard the music start playing. And
no, it's fine. No, it's okay. It's interesting. That's like another epic, like inflatedly romantically poetic crush, lust, love level lyric. And maybe that was mostly what all my lyrics were at the time, but that was very specifically about a woman. I mean, let's not call her a woman. We were all in our very early 20s. We were all children, even though we all wanted to be called men and women at the time. But looking back from
I remember
from 50, we were kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So this woman who I have a huge crush on, we were friends, but it was unrequited. And I think what I would do is sort of turn them into kind of monuments, just get to the pure feeling and turn it into like an almost operatic version of the reality. I mean, the reality of an unrequited crush is it wasn't that dramatic or that heartbreaking even. It wasn't like I was in love with her, but it was really cathartic and fun and kind of funny to turn these sort of, you know, mundane but potent love crushes into these epic, monumental lyrics that sound like, again, like operatic or or cinematic almost. And I don't know. I guess it reminds me how useful the combination of sort of mundane life material, just kind of everyday interactions and relationships, when you mix them with sort of the potency of dreams or something, because everything got very surreal and dreamlike and inflated in those lyrics, and it's cool. It's cool that that's what you're doing. Also, a thing I noticed in that, as well as X French, is there's this cool. I mean, I guess they're roughly the same tempo, but in both sections that you played of X French and Heehan, there's this great thing where a snare flam will like stop the end of a phrase. It like comes in a, it comes, sort of interrupts the phrase and ends the music and comes where the kick would normally come. And there's something so rock and so like effective about that. And I remember we used to really get off on that.
That's probably why it stood out to me. It's those moments. That's the goosebump moment where you hear that and you're like, oh, I got to hear that again. And that's another one that makes me do that. It's that type of song.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
Yeah, that's cool.
You mentioned, you know, it's interesting in the songs and you talk about operatic and, or, you know, this powerful, you take a moment and you go big. Is this kind of where it led you, or is this what led you into doing more what you do now with soundtracks and TV and that music, where you had this passion for going big and going for this sound that really emanates? Has that kind of been that natural progression?
I was always a pretty dramatic motherfucker, and arguably melodramatic. And it was always a parallel. They were always parallel tracks for me, music and theater and film. And so my obsession with movies was kind of second only to my obsession with music. And so it occurred to me at some point in my teens, because I would always do these experimental, ambient, music, concrete, whatever, just fuck around like four-track bedroom recordings, which had a much more cinematic feel to it. And then growing up, I grew up in Cleveland before I moved to D.C., and one of my few best friends growing up from a very early age was David Wayne, who's a director and a writer and a comedian. And he was always making videos of himself, even when we were 9, 10, 11, in the basement of his parents' house. And there was also always a band, equipment for rehearsal and a two-track reel-to-reel for recording. So it was this kind of production facility, and he was always the movie and video making wing, and I was always or frequently the music making arm. And we went to college together, and he and a lot of my other friends who would go on to form the comedy group The State.
Oh yes, were, absolutely.
Yeah, they were all in film school at NYU, and I was in theater school and in Shutter Think. So I started doing music for student films and for theater while I was in college. So it was this very natural second pass, so that when Shutter Think got set up with being on the road and being with each other and having to make records for The Man, which was beginning, it was headed in that direction. Like, if we were going to stay on Epic Records after 50,000 BC, we were, you know, they were going to need some hits. And we were just like, we'd kind of rather focus on film soundtracks at that point. It was great because I had already been doing some music for The State, and I had done some student films. And friends of ours who were filmmakers were just starting to make their debut features. So it worked out really, really well to be able to change lanes naturally and in a sort of fluid transitional way, which I think was in retrospect incredibly fortunate. And I see how many artists who, from band backgrounds, who are interested in getting into film music, it's really, really hard for them. But we already had sort of a foot in that lane, so it was cool.
Very cool story. I love it.
Worked out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did work out, because here you are.
Yeah, here I am. In fact, when you called, I'm just working on the new season of the TV show Glow, which I love so much.
Oh, wow. Well, that has to be wild to be doing that. But I do want to go to your solo work, too, as I kind of go in between some of these songs. The another one that I wanted to pull out here was a song you did on Wand, and it's called Make Me Hurt You. Mm-hmm. And this song, this moment in this song is so incredible. One of those I sing along in the car out loud with the windows up, of course, so no one can hear me, but here, here it is. I love that song, that part of the song especially, so much. It might have a lot to do with, you know, growing up with parents that loved Beach Boys, Beatles, and Turtles, and and that whole happy beat, the double clap, kind of like that movie that came out not too long ago, That Thing You Do, written by the Fountains of Wayne guys. That type of song that kind of makes you feel good in that. And yet, and it says, but the title is like, Make Me Hurt You. And it's kind of this, you know, it's a dual edge. It's like almost like a double meaning, this beautiful music and then Make Me Hurt You. Don't want me. I just love this song.
Thank you. I love that song too. The first part of that song, I probably shouldn't say this for risk of lawsuit, but first part of that song is basically a direct quote melodically from a Generation X song called Untouchables, which is one of my favorite songs. I actually think Billy Idol is wonderful and a totally underrated songwriter. And I think he wrote the song Untouchables, which I love Gen X, and it was and that among my favorite of their songs. And in that period when I wrote that, occasionally I would just lift some of my favorite parts from other people's songs, really quite openly and honestly, in homage to the melodies that raised me and influenced me. And the verse of Make Me Hurt You is one of those. The chorus is its own thing, but I agree with you. It's got that kind of sunny 60s, 70s bubblegum or like power pop thing to it. And I've always been really attracted to pure old fashioned hooks. So yeah, the double claps, like you said, Beach Boys, Beatles, Big Star, you know, Cheap Trick, all of it.
Yes, exactly. And that's the beauty of music, is you can go all over with all the different influences and come up with some beauty. And that's one of those, you know, on your solo record, if people haven't checked it out, let's say you've been a Shudder to Think fan, you really need to go through Craig's solo stuff, because there's a lot of gems in there. That being one of them, such a beautiful song. Another one, because I have you here, it is going back to Shudder and the Pony Express records, but it's one of those songs out of all the songs on this record. Of course, there are moments like about exchanging your skin for leather in Gang of Dollar Sign. That was such a great, you can take a lot of abuse if you exchange your skin for leather. It's such a great line.
Do you want to hear the etymology of that line?
Yeah, please. Okay, actually, so I can play it real quick,
all of my lines have like very specific images and like origins attached to them. Like, that's how I connect to my lyrics, which don't always make sense to the, they don't always make literal sense to the reader, but they make very, very clear literal sense to me. I can always tell when a lyric is a keeper because I can picture it like a Polaroid in front of my face. Like, yes. I picture the scene, even if it's not some, even if it's something imaginary. So my friend Charles Gonza, who with whom I went to NYU and who became a sort of integral part of Shudder to Think for a little while. He came on tour with us. He and Nathan and I were best friends for a summer. And he made a documentary about an alleged doctor who was living in Brooklyn in whatever neighborhood, Gonza was what we called him. And we couldn't tell, it seemed like this doctor, in quotes, was maybe schizophrenic. Mm. And it was impossible to tell what he was saying was the truth or in his imagination, if he was a genius, if he was a quack, if he was endangering people's lives, if he actually had any practice at all. And he had this very strange theorem that he called rejuvenate. And I remember in one part of the documentary, he said something about his skin being made of leather. And that was the way he said it in the documentary, leather.
Awesome.
And Charles Gonza and I used to, and probably Nathan too, but I think that was when we were all hanging out. It just became one of those catchphrases between friends while we were talking about our skin being made of leather. So it just wound its way into, what is it, Gang of Money? Is that what song?
Yes, yes, that's exactly. Here, let me play it right now so that everyone can know what we're talking about.
Tip, you can take a lot of abuse if you exchange your skin for
there it is.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, it's all fodder. It's so funny. I haven't thought of that in so long.
That's so good. Well, on Pony Express Records.
One more thought. He never finished the movie because he felt like he was exploiting the guy by, you know, exploiting a crazy person. They're making a movie about him, so he never edited it or did anything with it, but it was really compelling and upsetting.
That's incredible. What a great story. Uh-huh. I love stories about songs, especially ones that we love, right?
Yeah.
The one on Pony Express Records, though, mine that hit me the most emotionally, and it might have been years of, you know, growing up in a religious house or just the spiritual side of things, just because of the imagery I had. And it was this kind of, it's Earthquakes Come Home. And this song had a moment in here, and I'm going to pull it up right now. It's at 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Obviously this whole song, when it kicks in, is beautiful, but it's right here at 2:20, and I'm going to play it because it is just vivid. You said when you looked at lyrics, sometimes you look at it right in front of you and you picture it. And this song was so vivid to me when you would sing it and perform it. I'm going to play it right now.
You care what you're like.
Now, obviously, the line repeats and repeats, and at the end, down the rope is just this really dark and graphic thing at the very end, down the rope. But it's the line about heaven is holding out for high scores up where tears pour is so beautiful, such a beautiful line. And that one always hit me when I would hear this song. And that's a part right there I would play over and over again just because of how emotional it was.
Thank you. Hearing those lyrics in these parts through your perspective is really helping me hear them afresh and to connect with them in a way that I'd kind of forgotten. Like when I wrote there, I really loved the lyrics to Earthquakes Come Home. It's one of my favorite. Earthquakes is one of my favorite Charter King songs, but it's also a set of lyrics that, you know, a lot of times, like I was saying, I'll connect to an image and that's when I know I have a lyric. But, you know, sometimes it's time to record the song and there'll be a handful of great lines, but everything doesn't connect quite perfectly yet. But with Earthquakes, it's one of those songs that felt very complete when we recorded it lyrically and melodically and just kind of arrangement-wise. But that line that you just said, was that heaven is holding out for high scores up where tears pour down. Like, that, what, couplet? I don't know what that's called. That group of lines, it really says sort of the whole thing.
It really does.
It's like,
it really does.
You've got like heaven, you've got like the pressure of having to behave and do well because of some because of ideas about heaven or the afterlife, but then it's also sort of romantic and it's kind of sad. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I hadn't really thought about that in a while. I always think, when I think of earthquakes, the lines I usually think of are, you look bored but very fine, which I always really liked, and scare the piss out of the bedpan.
Yes.
Just like a little clever lines, but yes. But not so much the epic romantic ones, which the, you know, appropriately it starts off sort of, you know, innuendo-y during the very spare verse, and then it winds up super epic for the big quirky outro. So, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And when did you find your voice? You know, your voice is so distinct when you hold notes. I mean, if I talk to anybody and I mention you and Shudder, it's when you hold the notes. When did you come into your own, where you found your voice and you felt really comfortable with it? Did you work at it? Did you take a coach?
I started singing in bands when I was 12, and they were mostly covers. So I've always been a pretty good mimic, and so I was imitating Ozzy Osbourne and Johnny Rotten and Rick Ocasek and whoever else, and David Lee Roth. So I was able to do other people's voices really well. But at a certain point, I would say around maybe when I was 14, I kind of found that, you know, we all get, there's certain gifts one gets, and you hopefully develop those gifts, and then everything else you kind of just have to fill in by working really, really hard. So I have this one part of my voice, like that sort of open, held, like sort of quasi-operatic, not intentionally. It's just that like big, open kind of vibrato thing. Mm-hmm. And then my falsetto. So those were the two parts of my voice that I had. And I was like, oh, okay, those are pretty distinct and cool. Now I just have to like fill in the entire rest of the picture and figure out how to sing loud and soft and in the middle of my voice and, you know, in things that aren't these big open notes or the top of my range. And I think it finally all started coming together for me around Ten Spot, which is the second Shudder to Think record.
Yes.
Before Ten Spot, I was still half imitating other people and really pushing and stretching and trying to figure out what quote unquote my voice was, except when I would go into like the big open held note thing or a falsetto thing where it sounded like my voice. But I had this really wonderful voice teacher in college at NYU named Lisa Sokolov, who is still a magnificent teacher and singer. And she's a pretty like out experimental jazz singer. So she sort of brought me back down to earth. She was like, her basic message was, you don't need to sing like anybody else. You don't need to try and be like singers that you're hearing. Like those, most of those singers are distinct and not trying to sing like anybody else. So that was really helpful, and I felt like I noticed a big difference between Curses, the very first Shudder to Think record, where it kind of sounds like Ozzy Osbourne and Susie Sue had a baby, and that was what I would say, like, which is, I mean, those two of my favorite voices, by the way. But then on Ten Spot, it just starts to sound like me, you know? So I think that was due to Lisa.
Were you talking about Sushi and the Banshees, right? Sushi Sue?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And what was the other band artist you said? You said, yeah.
On the first Shudder to Think record, it's like if you took Ozzy Osbourne.
Ozzy Osbourne, that's what it was. Yeah, that is a great combination. Mm-hmm. Well, look. Crazy Train is unmistakable. I mean, you listen to the old Black Sabbath records. He has a unique voice. What's that?
I love his voice. The first song that I ever sang live was Paranoid? I think it was Paranoid at the like the Battle of the Bands when I was 12.
There's Craig Redrin saying Paranoid. There you go. That's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah. Real quick, I know to be on time here, two other songs that I just want to, I'd be crazy if I didn't point them out because I absolutely love them from you. Call of the Playground was on the 50,000 BC record. And there was a song, that song, Call of the Playground, there's a moment at 208 that I want to play here. And again, getting into the voice and the words here real quick are, "And dream you were sucking poison down, and there was your dollar scar. Tell me what you want. I'm afraid to put you out on the table with your mouth. Did you ever, baby, tell me what you want? I'm a star, star, star." And it repeats in there. But this is so amazing. Let me make sure I'm not going to screw this up because I got to cue it up first, Don. Look at that. Like a DJ. He's trying to talk it up and get it ready. Here we go.
Tell me what you wanna tell me what you wanna start.
Man, if you could hear me in the car when I sing along to that song. But it's the notes that we're talking about right there.
I love that record. That record didn't get quite the love of like Pony Express record in our Discord stuff. It was because it was like a little popular, sort of like wearing other influences. We were starting to explore like other stuff on that record. But one of the things I love about that record is there's like a level of intensity in my vocal performances mm-hmm. on it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think in part it was because I had cancer at the time and I was undergoing radiation and chemo while we were recording it. So the doctors were like, because the cancer was in my like collarbone and neck. And so
wow.
they're radiating my throat. And the doctors were like, listen, sing, by all means sing, because, you know, we don't know, at some point you might not be able to sing anymore because of, because the radiation dries you out and scorches your throat. And so every day I would go to the studio and we didn't know that it might be like my last day. Right.
Amazing.
And, so I would just sit there with like gallons of water in the vocal booth because I was super dry from the radiation. And I would just chug water as I was doing these vocal takes. And there's sort of an intensity, I think, that you can hear, like a defiance or a something. It's just really going for it. Like we were all really going for it on that record. A, we sort of knew that it was our last shot with Epic Records. You know, they were basically like, look, you can't make another Pony Express record because it's just too weird. and we really need something that we can, you know, try and like sell.
Right.
And we understood that, and we knew, you know, moving from Discord to Epic that, you know, we kind of had one chance to make a weird ass record, and then it didn't do that well. And it was like, well, cool, that's a fun assignment. Let's try and make a more accessible Shudder to Think record while still feeling like Shudder to Think. But of course, our idea of what should, would, and could be popular was very different than what was actually happening on the radio, which was like Gin Blossoms and right. you know, whatever else. Like catchy music, but not what we were ever going to do. And so we made 50,000 BC, and we just kind of like threw it all out on the table, as it were. And I think you really hear it in the performances and in my voice. And there's a kind of, I guess, last sort of cry in that record where it was like, okay, here it is. Love it, or you know, or it's over. And then it was over.
Unbelievable.
I mean, we started doing film soundtracks and stuff, but it, you know, it was like our last rock offering, epic offering.
You know,
I think that album's aged well, though. It turns out, do like that record now. It was just so different at the time from what we had done that they didn't. That they were like, you're so out.
I loved it. I still, it's in my rotation constantly. And here, there's,
awesome.
Here we've got, here, let me do this one. This one here, again, talking about your voice and how you went for it. The Saddest Day of My Life, right here.
Your heart will bleed, your eyes will burn.
that is that part right there. It was coming out of the it's sad when you leave me alone. You know that part, and then that's like
that part.
Yes. Oh, but then that's the bridge, pretty much right there. That little part that I just played, and it's so beautiful, just in how the vocals are going with the music, and now hearing the story behind what you were going through and have survived, coming through that. Makes this record even more powerful in, you know, here as a listener for those, all these years that has listened to this album over and over again, it puts a different, you know, spin on it that it makes it more emotional for me as I'm listening to these songs.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that was a really, really tough record for us to make. It's interesting playing that. I just had this memory of, there was a guy who was in promotions at Epic Records, and everybody at Epic was super cool and super sweet and super nice. And they all really tried to, break, for lack of a better word, quote unquote, Shudder to Think. But they really just didn't know, like, what slot to put us in, because we only sound like Shudder to Think. And I remember when we played, we had, a listening session for 50,000 BC, right when we finished it, and I think the promo guy was there, and when we played Saturday of My Life, after he was like, I've got it, like, I finally get it, it's like Roy Orbison, it's like punk Roy Orbison or something like that. And I was like, oh no, we're in big trouble. This isn't going to work. This is not going to work. I mean, I love Roy Orbison, and I think he has one of the most, if not the most beautiful voices of all time. And I totally understood what the guy was trying to say when he said that. But it just felt like it was one of those comments where you hear it and you're like, oh, they're not going to be able to do anything with this record.
Despite their
best intentions.
For a while, I was sad for.
Yes, exactly.
That's fantastic. Well, in conclusion, is there a song of all the work you've done? Is there the one that you look back and went, I write songs and poetry and stuff. And there is a couple that stand out to me like, wow, I'll never be able to duplicate that. That just came out of a raw place. And do you have one of those in your collection of things you've done that went, wow, that was it.
I go through different phases with different songs and different lines. So it sort of depends on my taste. I don't know if I have a definitive song. Like, recently, kind of my recent high watermark, which isn't to say I think it's like necessarily this like epic, out of the park, like perfect song, but just in terms of where my songwriting is currently at, I'm incredibly satisfied by the song Adult Desire off of my last record, Adult Desire. Just the actual composition of it and the production of it and the lyrical intention behind it. It just feels like, oh, wow, that's like, I want to write songs that are that good, that are like that rich all the time. And then I go off in a different direction and write like 50 other things that are completely different. So I'm sort of always experimenting and trying different things. So I'll do something that I think is amazing, followed by 10 things that are hilariously sort of doe-legged and hackneyed just because I don't know how to do it yet. But then in 5 years, those things that I'm trying to do now that maybe feel embarrassing, I'll figure it out and put it together. It was like what you were saying about it's what we were saying about the parts of the voice that you then have to fill in the blanks and work on it. And the parts that you're filling in may sound a little weak and silly for 3 years, but then, then it'll ding the bell. But in terms of what we were talking about today, I'm very proud of Earthquakes Come Home. I really like that song.
Oh, that's
like
fantastic.
I don't think there's anything I would change about that song.
No, I mean everything from the lyrics to the music and your Adult Desire, record. I did actually, I had two things that I pointed out on that record. One that really stood out to me was Be a Man.
That was another one I was going to say. I'm very, like, lyrically, I think Be a Man is so tight.
Oh, it's fantastic. And there's this moment right here, since I have you, and then I'll let you get back to work. I can't thank you enough for even spending time with me. Here it is.
Sure, my pleasure.
That voice, this song just goes right through me when I was listening to it because of your vocal in
there.
Thank you. The way it was so emotional roller coaster in when you were singing it. So
yeah, that one came from the heart.
Oh, you can tell. It was beautiful. So Craig, I thank you so much for being here, going through some of these songs with me, taking a trip down memory lane and talking about these goosebump moments. I mean, everyone, I'm telling you right now, if you just sat down and put on headphones and listened to everything from Shudder to Craig's work, to even the soundtrack music, which I even have notes for, it just takes you away. It takes you to another place. And I thank you for sharing your creativity with us, and we'll continue to follow you and listen for years to come. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your day and good luck with the soundtrack to Gotham.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Now, what you heard there was amazing. I have goosebumps that I just got to talk to. It was an out-of-body experience, really, being able to talk to Craig about the music. This was just outstanding. I want to play something here, and this is how we're going to conclude, and it ties in. So Shudder the Think did a Give Me the Cure. This was the Washington, D.C. area bands got together back in the 90s and for HIV/AIDS awareness and to raise money. And they did basically a compilation of Cure songs, and each band from D.C., Jawbox did Meat Hook. Several other bands were on there. Shudder the Think did my favorite Cure song, and I wanted to tie it in because they just did the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Cure, that is. They were just inducted, and they actually played this song. This is my favorite Cure song. It's not Friday I'm in Love. It's not, what is that song? I'll Be With Love Song, right? Or Just Like Heaven. They're popular songs. No, it was Shake Dog Shake for me. And the fact that back in the day, Shudder the Think had covered this song, because I bought this comp CD when it was out. And, because of obviously Jawbox and Shudder and all these other bands, or Edsel was on there. So amazing comp CD. And this right here, and I want to play it because they justice to Robert Smith and The Cure. Then I'm going to play it right now. And this is where we're going to close out. Thank you, everyone, for being here.